After a large fire at a fireworks warehouse in Staffordshire, which saw two others taken to hospital.
All the fireworks started going off, started coming because it's a suspended ceiling in our building, and they all started coming through the actual top of the ceiling into our offices.
Stephanie Horton works in the building next door to SP Fireworks in Stafford. A 53-year-old man's been arrested. Dramatic footage showed thick plumes of smoke and dramatic bursts of fireworks exploding in all directions from the building. Stephanie was treated at the scene for smoke inhalation.
Within seconds, the place was full of smoke. We were actually trapped up there because the only exit is our main exit door. But luckily, we've got a door through to the next unit. It's bolted and locked, but only by chance that one of our bigger engineers was with us on that evening, and he managed to literally rip the door off the hinges for us to be able to escape.
Meanwhile, West Midlands firefighters will take part in a four-day strike beginning at 6 o'clock this evening. It's the latest round of action in a national dispute over government changes to their pensions. It comes the weekend before Bonfire Night, one of their busiest times of the year. The killer of Shropshire schoolgirl Georgia Williams has lost his appeal against his whole life sentence. Jamie Reynolds killed 17-year-old Georgia at his parents' home in what was described as a carefully planned and sadistic murder. Today, Georgia's parents said they felt tremendous relief and thanked the court, saying any other decision would have devalued their daughter's life. Here's Georgia's dad, Steve.
I go to sleep crying. I wake up with tears in my eyes. And the tears that I've never, ever, they actually burn into my eyes. She would have lived every second. But he took that away from her in the cruelest way possible.
Downing Street has insisted the Prime Minister continues to fully support the woman chosen to lead the government's inquiry into historical child sexual abuse. Lord Mayor of London, Fiona Wolfe, is facing calls to resign amid claims she tried to play down her links with the former Home Secretary, Lord Britton. He's been criticised over his handling of the child abuse allegations in the 1980s, but he denies failing to act properly. The National Association for People Abused in Childhood say Fiona Wolfe can't remain as chair, and the MP for Yardley, John Hemming, who's campaigned on the issue, agrees.
If you were having magistrates sitting looking at, or a judge sitting and looking at a criminal trial, and the defendant was a good friend of theirs, would you think it's a fair process? And even if people will have to deal with things completely properly, the way our rules work is it's about how things are perceived by the ordinary person.
And the Labour leader, Ed Miliband, is to announce he'd transfer billions of pounds from Westminster to cities like Birmingham and regions like the West Midlands if he wins the election. Labour says the money would allow local authorities to set their own transport fares or bring in payment systems similar to the Oyster card in London. Ed Miliband will be speaking about the plans live on Drive Time with Paul Franks from 4 here on BBC WM 95.6. Looking at the weather, some sunny spells this afternoon, unseasonably warm with highs of 21 degrees Celsius, 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Tonight, very mild but breezy, with a few spots of rain, lows of 12 degrees Celsius, 54 degrees Fahrenheit. BBC WM 95.6 News. There's more online at bbc.co.uk/WM.
That was fabulous. You think I'm just saying this because we're talking about praise this afternoon, but that was, I mean, that was flawless, wasn't it? It was exquisite. Rob, I don't know what to tell you about that.
Well, thanks very much. It's rare praise.
It's a pleasure. Is it you and I together all afternoon?
It will be, yes.
If this doesn't win an award between now and four, mate, then nothing will. When was the last time somebody said to you, well done, Rob?
I'll get back to you.
Okay, all right. We've got a couple of hours.
Shane O'Connor.
On BBC WM.
95.6.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't think it'd take that long for you to think about it. Seriously, we're talking about praise this afternoon. We're going to hear from a teacher a little bit later on. Shane O'Connor, by the way, sitting in for Ian Lee. Ian Lee has lost his voice. And I said, can't I just sit on his lap or something and he can whisper to me? I go, what's that, Ian? He goes, and I can do the show like that. Apparently, they wouldn't pay for the two. It's either or. So I'm afraid you got me now for the next couple of hours. We're talking about youngsters being praised. Amazing story that's kicking around today. And if you've seen this, there's a suggestion they're praising youngsters. And you kind of think, well, that's what you do, isn't it? If you're bringing up youngsters, if you're teaching youngsters, you praise them, you say, well done, you keep going with that kind of thing. But they say, no, that isn't the way to get the best out of youngsters. We'll talk to a teacher, but I want to hear from you on the show this afternoon. Teachers who give struggling pupils lavish praise could make them even less likely to succeed, according to research into classroom tactics, they're saying today, and I'm trying to figure out, so does that actually answer the way that I turned out like I did or not? I don't know whether I'm the argument or the counterpoint to it. I'm not really quite sure. The Sutton Trust are saying this afternoon, they're an education charity, they warn that many strategies used by teachers just don't work. So, you know, this idea of giving you big ticks and smiley faces, and don't they do these like gold stars? I haven't got kids, so I don't know, but don't they do like gold stars and smiley faces and put notes on and all of that kind of stuff to kind of make youngsters a little bit more sort of clued into to what they're trying to achieve? Does that work? In your experience, does that work? We're asking this afternoon whether you were... Well, just remember the last time you were praised at school, what was it? Did it work for you? Did it make you actually try harder? I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they were saying about... When they were a youngster, they used to dance, and they used to go to dance lessons, and they used to stand behind a really talented person in that dance class. They're about 9 years old, something like that, and they said they used to think, I'm going to work as hard as I can to be like that person. I thought, I was never like that. At 9 years, at 19, 29, 39, I was never like that. I never thought like that, never kind of pushed myself, had to be pushed all the while, had to be kind of forced and come on, get on with it. I'm just wondering now whether it wasn't really my fault. It was the fact that they weren't giving me enough praise. And boy, what could I have achieved? I might be doing a programme from outer space if I'd have been perhaps praised a little bit more. But I want to hear from you this afternoon. Praise. Does it work? Do you do it with your kids? Do you kind of have some kind of system with your kids? Did you have that as a kid as well? But perhaps more importantly, we'll kind of move that on as well and say, okay, that's when we were kids. But if we're praising kids and pretending that the world is fabulous and everybody every 20 minutes is going to come up and say, you are so special, you are so wonderful, what a lovely job you are doing, then I'm afraid the world of work will dictate that you're going to be sadly disappointed. So we're asking the question, have you got a boss that actually praises you? Maybe you are a boss. Maybe you're very keen on doing that. And are there better ways of praising people? Some are better than others. I've got this real pet hate. You know when they do the newsletter things? And they're doing by email now, don't they? And they say, oh, we had a great week this week and so-and-so did really well at doing that and such and such. And you kind of read these things and you think, well, that's their job. Why are we... It's a bit like getting an award for doing your job. Why are you praising them for that? And what about me? If you praise somebody, if you name somebody and you go, thank you to so-and-so for doing that, then what about such and such is getting... They're sitting there thinking, well, why are you praising them? You've singled them out for praise and you haven't done it for me. Love your thoughts this afternoon. 03453 009956 is my number. Joe's with us. Ian's producer is keeping me on the straight and narrow between now and four. If you want to send me a text, 81333, start your message, WM. Love to know your thoughts this afternoon on praise for youngsters. The other one we're going to kick around as well, and we're going to do lots between now and four anyway, but the other one I wanted to sort of just mention briefly as well, because I don't know if you've got a thought on this. I don't know if you've seen the story in Birmingham where a club had to apologise for holding an Ebola party. You do wonder how they ever sit down at a meeting and think, oh, that's a brilliant idea. Why haven't we thought of having an Ebola party sometime previous to this? A Birmingham nightclub has had to apologise. They said it was a huge error of judgment. And now, of course, people are saying, you know, well, there aren't acceptable ways to dress up. The interesting thing, the one that's sweeping America at the moment, I don't know if you've seen the video, there's a guy, an American football player called Ray Rice, who punched and knocked unconscious his girlfriend in a lift. And there's a video knocking around as well. And in America, at Halloween parties, people were going to go dressed with Ray Rice shirts on to kind of make an ironic point. But they're saying, no, it is in really bad taste. Is there a line in terms of dressing up? Is there a line that we just shouldn't cross? I want to hear from you on that one as well. 03453 009956. For example, when did it not become okay to go to a fancy dress party as Hitler? What I don't know. I went to bed one day and I woke up sometime later. I'm not really quite sure what happened in between time, but it didn't. It became not okay. I think it wasn't it Harry, Prince Harry, who went to a party dressed as Hitler. Now, I grew up with Freddie Starr, on a Saturday night, running around in shorts and a Hitler uniform and wearing Wellingtons. And then all of a sudden it wasn't okay. When did that happen? And where is the line for taste and decency? Because the things that you might like and you might think are okay, I might think are disgusting. So where do we go with that one? 03453 009956, my number. 81333 on the text. You need to start your message WM. You can tweet me as well if you want to be quite sophisticated this afternoon. Shane on air, all one word, Shane on air. Shane on air, if you want to send me a tweet this afternoon as well. Love to hear from you. Now I know Caroline's been doing scary music this afternoon. It's all I got left. I haven't got anything else left. She's used them all.
years and years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb.
Oh, yes.
Are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
He wanted Kenneth Williams, you know, but he wasn't available. 16 minutes past two. Good afternoon, Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee. Shut the door behind you, will you? Thanks. Between now and four on on the text. I don't mind if you want to get in touch just to abuse people. That's fine as well. On the text this afternoon, 81333, start your message, WM. Simon says, Shane, I doubt Ian's lost his voice. He's just miffed and sulking. This is his show tomorrow. He's going to be cut short in the morning because of the Wolves Blues game. And he says, that's probably why he's not... No, it's quite the reverse, isn't it? Because it's me tomorrow for that as well. And I thought, oh, that's a half an hour off as well. I'm sitting, listen to the game on BBC WM. So yeah, I hear what you're saying, Simon. I think the logic is flawed. 81333 on the text, starting message WM, if you want to be part of the show this afternoon. We're talking about praising youngsters and whether it actually works. Well, it's a good idea or not. I mean, I suppose you have to have some level of praise, don't you? And were you praised as a kid? Did it work for you? Did it motivate you? And just think back, and everybody's struggling with this question. It's quite interesting. I probably struggle with it as well. When was the last time somebody praised you at work and said, well done, top job, really good job? Love to hear from you on the show this afternoon, 03453 009956. And it's often said that a little bit of praise goes a long way, doesn't it? But this new study out today suggests that lavishing praise on underachieving pupils is unlikely to help them improve in the classroom. It's research commissioned by the educational charity The Sutton Trust, and they suggest that children who get lots of praise often feel that teachers have got low expectations of them. Oh, I get it, I see. Professor Robert Coe, he's one of the authors of the report.
One of the things that the report says is good is having high expectations. And one of the things about high expectations is that you're never quite satisfied. You know, you're always wanting people to do a bit better. And so for a teacher, that's a really hard balancing act between, you know, wanting children to feel good about what they're doing, to feel competent and able to have a go, but also never being completely satisfied.
Tom Manners is a maths teacher and joins us on the line. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon.
Is it maths or math?
Oh, God, don't you dare say math.
Is it?
That's Americanized. I don't like it one bit.
I'm sorry, sir.
I tell every child, if it's on the front of their book and it says math, I'll immediately take a big ink pen and put a PS.
OK, I'll do my lines. I'll start doing my lines now. I'll get them underway.
Well, I think that's about right.
What do you think, Tom? What do you think about this this idea? This is the Sutton Trust saying that, and they're saying particularly with underachievers, with youngsters who are not doing well, they're saying don't praise. Praise can often be misconstrued by the student.
It's whether you're giving praise for very little details, something you expect them to do. Now, listening to Professor Coe then, he was saying about the high expectations, and that's the right thing. If you're giving praise for just the tiniest things, which you think they should be able to do already, then it's pointless. I'll try to think of an analogy, and imagining standing in the studio with you now, and if I was the boss, and I was watching your show, and I was telling you what you're doing right and wrong, if you asked a really deep and interesting question, I'd go, oh, great stuff, because that's kind of the top things you do. However, if you press the button in front of you that says go for the next record, and be praised for that, you'd be like, well, why am I being praised for that? That's easy.
Okay.
And so, praise can be over-delivered, because if you're giving it for just the tiniest of details, it's pointless. It's a waste of time. And as the report suggests, well, if you're congratulating me for doing this, that's low expectations. You know, I can do that. That's simple.
So
easy for hard stuff.
As a teacher, then, all the while, you're constantly you're looking at performance and you're trying to make an assessment as to where that child is in terms of progression.
There's all sorts of studies about what the most effective things you can be doing as a teacher are, and one of them is student-teacher relationships. And with that in mind as well, it's having knowledge of your class. So yes, with all the assessment that teachers have to do, you have to know what your class is capable of, and hopefully every individual as well. So why I might praise one pupil for getting a quadratic equation correct, and I'll be testing you shortly.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. and if I might ask another pupil to demonstrate what a half is. And, of course, I appreciate their different abilities, and so I praise the one for achieving something above where they usually are, because they deserve it for that.
In terms of marking, and this is the one I'm fascinated by as well, when you mark stuff, do you tend to... I mean, how personal do you make that? Do you kind of write on and sort of put notes there and say, this was good because of this, or I expect you to do that, why didn't you do that correctly? How personal do you get with that, Tom?
Well, oddly enough, feedback is kind of the key thing. It's the biggest influence on pupils that you can possibly do, so you've got to get it right for each pupil. Some pupils would prefer maybe a conversation. You can give general feedback to a whole class and then say, well, I've done that in the past after marking exams. I give it back to all of them and say, look, here's the general feedback from the whole exam, and they have to go through and decide which bits are relevant to them. Because if you just write remarks or write scores on a book, pupils will often just look at it and think, and they don't take it in. So you've got to get them engaged with the feedback. And again, you praise. There's a very common thing called two stars and a wish, where you give two positive remarks and one wish that you got better. And that's really popular, certainly in primary school, and it's not actually overly effective in many ways. For certain pupils, it won't work, because they don't want the two stars. They just want the three wishes. So again, it's about knowing your pupils well enough, but there are so many different forms of feedback, but you've got to make sure they're engaged in it.
What about prizes? And I'm not talking of anything of huge, you know, monetary value, but this idea of making little certificates up and little ribbons and rosettes, or somebody that I work with, their child last week, I think it was, and I don't know the details, but they won the star. She's only about 8 or 9, something like that. Won the Star of the Week award and was chuffed to bits, chuffed to bursting about it. But what are your thoughts on that? Is that counterproductive or not?
Well, no. Again, it's about knowing the right level. You know, for that child in particular, maybe they haven't won many things, and to be recognised for what they do. But then again, if they'd have been recognised just for doing the same old normal stuff, then I'd say it's counterproductive, because, like, well, that's what I always do. You should praise for the something you've done better. For, you know, take it to the workplace. You've got more listening figures. Your workplace, more listening figures.
Yeah.
Take it to into a business, more products produced and whatnot. Something that says, do you know what, you've improved, you deserve to be praised. And so, you know, praise is massively important. It's, I think, a remark you made earlier. So when you say something negative to somebody, or when you say something positive to someone, I put a poster up in my classroom because one of my forms, they're a lovely group to me, but sometimes they often say things and don't realise the effects and scars they can have.
Yeah.
And I've said, there's an expression out there that you can live for 2 months off a good compliment. And I think that means a hell of a lot. And I get them just to have a champion of the week, to praise something you have done that makes you better that week.
Here's the one that I have a problem with, is and they do this in business now, and I think it's really lazy management, this idea of sending like a round robin, a little newsletter or something like that, and they say, oh, and this was good this week, and that was good that week, and all the rest of it. And because I bet you, for every one that you've got that you praise there are 10 people sitting there thinking, well, thanks a lot, I flog me guts out, I don't even get a mention, I never get a mention. What about the ones left behind? What does it do to them, Tom, do you think?
No, you're absolutely right. I worked in a school where they tried something similar for the staff, and you're able to nominate a nominee of the week, a teacher of the week, and if your name wasn't on there, and I'd see people doing tasks that I'm like, well, I do that all the time.
Yes, that's it.
No, I completely understand where you come from with that, but that's down to management of individuals again, who wants what. And something like that's very generic, and so therefore I think it fails, because it's generic. If you're doing something in the classroom, you've got to be as personal as possible. As I say, the teacher-student relationship, with all these reports, the Sutton Trust you mentioned, but there's a gentleman called John Hattie, and they're the big kind of researchers and come with all these big results. And the two biggest things are feedback and the relationship between teacher and student. And as I say, it's about that personalised learning, the personalised praise. What does that child need to be working on? Great, you've been doing that. And actually knowing those pupils particularly well. I think general praise like that, as you say, it can often cause kind of, well, a dissatisfaction from the others, because they don't feel they're being recognised.
And jealousy as well, isn't it?
Other
thing, jealousy. Very quickly, just because we've covered a lot of ground, and I was just thinking about, what about a point scheme? What about when you you get so many points and then it actually means something as well? Are you a fan of those or not?
A lot of schools do it, and they're always trying to find new ways of doing it as well. Years 7 to 9, so children aged 11 to 14, they very much buy into getting merits, and that merit means something. You get a certificate for so many, but if you get your gold certificate, you may go in the draw to win an iPad, for example.
Wow.
And that's actually coming more and more common. It's finding the right triggers. 14 to 16-year-olds, well, they'd be interested in the iPad, so they'll push themselves forward.
Yeah.
So, absolutely, that's something like that, which people, the teachers can give out merits regularly as well. But again, it's choosing the right time to give those merits. So not praising for, well done, you put your shoes on. It's praising them for having a go at trying something they've never done before and actually learning something from it.
It's got my attention. I'll be back in touch to find out how I win an iPad. Tom, thanks for that. Tom Manners, math teacher, who's joining us on the show this afternoon. Listening to that, Alan in Woodgate. Hi, Alan.
Hi,
what are your thoughts?
Well, I can see where you're coming from, because when I was at school when I was younger, we had a point system for good work.
Right.
And it was like, for every so many stars, you get a small certificate, and if you get, like, 50 stars, you get, like, a big certificate.
Yeah. Yep.
And this was a Ford Dwelling school in Quinton.
And did it work? I mean, did it motivate you, or did you think, oh, do you know what, I couldn't...
Motivated me to get my GCSE in maths.
Oh, wow. So, because that's the thing, I was thinking, oh, iPad, yeah, sign me up for that one. But it doesn't have to be a big thing. It could just be that you want to, because you're competitive, you want to achieve it, isn't it?
End of the day, I wasn't really competitive. As long as I kept my head down, got on with my work, I could achieve my GCSE in it.
I love it. And you did. You got it in the end.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you, mate. Alan, thanks for that. Alan in Woodgate. I'd love to know your thoughts this afternoon. Praising kids, do you? Have you got a system? Have you got one of those charts at home? You know, I'm in the kitchen and you put the stars on and like to try and, between youngsters, you know, you can kind of sort of like get a competition going. 03453 009956. Does that work at all? 81333 on the text. Start your message WM. Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Stereo, isn't it, though? Pretty old school. The Beatles, Eleanor Rigby, good afternoon. Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee between now and four. So let's catch up with the latest travel news then. Adam's got the details this afternoon. Hi, Adam.
Or it'll be Liz.
Hello. Sounds just like Liz. It's really good. Can you do that? Can you keep it up for a whole bulletin, or do you know? Or
nah.
No?
I'm a witch, actually.
No, so you're not sounding like her anymore
now.
You
need to be on your best behaviour.
You're a witch. Yeah. I've heard people call you worse than that, actually. Liz, I'm sorry.
Getting off their nose, really, isn't it?
They lied to me. What can I tell you? I can't see you quite from where I am. And they said, they promised me. It was, I don't want to name names because I don't want to get Joe Tidman into trouble. Mm. But, you know, they promised me. So, here with the travels, Liz.
I've been here all week.
Go on, how are we looking?
Shane, it is looking very congested. There's Friday afternoon traffic to contend with, but in Handsworth, Holiday Road is still shut in both directions. Police dealing with an incident between Tuke Park Road and Soho Road, the A41. As you make your way onto the motorways, the M5 going north is heavy from Junction 2 at Oldbury, trying to get onto the M6. The M6 congested southbound between 10 and 9. The A454 Wolverhampton and Walsall exit to the Wensbury turn and the A461. Northbound in the roadworks, you'll find it's a bit congested on the M6 as well. And on public transport, it's still this ongoing problem with the trams. The service is suspended between Wolverhampton, St George's and Wensbury Great Western Street. This is because of overhead line problems. If you can update us, 08453 00288.
I love Fridays.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. BBC WM 95.6.
Everything runs so smoothly. Let's get the latest news headlines this afternoon. Here's Rob Mayer.
Good afternoon. Fire crews say they could be at a fireworks warehouse in Stafford until the middle of next week. Two people are still missing there after a blaze last night. A 53-year-old man has been arrested. Meanwhile, firefighters across the West Midlands are preparing to take part in a four-day strike from 6 o'clock this evening. It's the latest round of action in a national dispute over government changes to their pensions. An 82-year-old man who shot dead a mother and daughter at his puppy farm in Surrey has been sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 25 years. John Lowe killed Christine Lee and Lucy Lee on the 23rd of February. He was found guilty earlier this week. And a Birmingham nightclub has apologised for what it's called a huge error of judgment in holding an Ebola-themed party. The Bar Risa building on Broad Street was decorated with fake biohazard tape and warning signs for a student party night on Wednesday. Looking at the weather, some sunny spells this afternoon, very mild for the time of year as well. Highs of 21 degrees Celsius, that's 70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Any news yet on the last time somebody... I'm really worried about you now. I don't know if we need to get you booked into therapy or something like that. Are you all right with it?
Yeah, I thought about earlier this week. I'm not a very technical, mechanical type of person.
Yes.
I fixed a bit of the engine on our car. And my other half was very impressed.
You're still struggling with work, though, aren't you? That's worrying me more than anything. I don't know.
That's always a struggle.
I don't know. What did you fix, actually, by the way? That's pretty good. I'm quite impressed.
I fixed something called the MAF sensor. I don't know what that stands for. But the car's running great now.
That is pretty impressive. Still to come on the show this afternoon, we're talking about dressing up. You see this French town that's been terrorised by... This started in America. I don't know if you saw this, Rob, but people dressing up as clowns.
Yes.
And just hanging about. They don't do anything. They don't attack you. They don't run after you. Anything, but they just hang about looking sinister and clown-like. Started in California. I know Wasco was one of the towns in California that started it. And now the French are doing it as well. I was getting in the car going to work very early the other day and just thought I would freak out. I'd really freak out. I mean, I'm all right with clowns, but what are they trying to do to people? I don't understand it. Do you? I don't.
A lot of people do find clowns quite difficult, don't they?
It's nothing to laugh at, I'll tell you that. There, that's for...
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. BBC WM 95.6.
Seriously, that wasn't... We didn't, I promise you, but there you go. Yeah, so I don't know if you've seen this. Have you seen this dressing up? You kind of got us thinking as well. And Rob in the news there was talking about the nightclub in Birmingham that thought, it'd be a great idea. Why don't we have some kind of Ebola party? Because Ebola is a really funny subject to have a bit of a titter about, isn't it? And it's that whole thing of when it's OK to go and fancy dress and when it isn't. I don't know if you've ever done that. Have you ever been to a fancy dress party and you've gone... I always think of Only Fools and Horses whenever people say about, you know, when they go to the funeral dressed this is Batman and Robin, that epic episode where they don't know it's fancy dress. So is it a boy she didn't bother to tell him that it wasn't fancy dress, it was actually a funeral and the party had been cancelled. Always think of that. I don't know if that's ever happened to you. Ever been to a party? And all I'm looking at, if you look through the newspapers and look online as well today, is people dressed up. I'm looking at a picture of Guy Ritchie dressed as a giant teddy bear, which is something, I've got to be honest with you, you don't see every day of the week as well. Dressing up in costume, when is it okay to dress up in certain kinds of costume and then it isn't okay to dress up in others? I went to bed one day and woke up sometime later and it wasn't okay to go to a fancy dress party as Hitler. And I've been through this, you know, if you're around the kind of like the 50s or something, you know, 50 years of age, you will be, like me, used to seeing people dressing up for laughs in a Nazi uniform. I mean, I don't, what's the difference between that and a low, a low? Is there a difference between the two? Or Dad's Army? I'm not really quite sure what the difference is. But I don't know if you've ever been to a fancy dress party or ever dressed up and it just wasn't appropriate or it didn't work or you kind of just, you know, really, really kind of got slated for what it is you went on. Give us a shout on the show this afternoon. 03453 00 9956. Still talking as well about praising youngsters. So we heard from a teacher there, Tom, the teacher, who was saying, you know, about praising youngsters and about whether it works or not. And he was saying if you praise youngsters or praise people in general, I suppose this works for adults as well. But if you praise people in general for things that they think, well, yeah, I can do that. So why are you praising me for it? I don't understand it. Then it is counterproductive. Are you motivated by some kind of achievement chart or something like that? You know, are you competitive? And do you respond to that kind of stuff? Because for every person that is like that, there are probably one at least, or maybe two, who are not like that and kind of don't, you know, really get motivated by being in competition with other people. Love to know what you think about that one as well. 03453 00 9956. As a youngster growing up, we never had, there was two of us, although there was a bit of an age gap between me and my brother, we never had any kind of competitive rounds in our house, if you know what I mean. Because what was the point? He was older than me. He was always going to win. It was like, and that's kind of give up. I think, why would I bother with that? Because at the end of the day, you're not going to do any good. So is it self sort of demotivating or is it motivating in the end? 81333 on the text. Start your message WM to join us on the show this afternoon. And Shane on Air is where you can find me on Twitter, all one word, S-H-A-N-E-O-N-A-I-R, Shane on Air, if you want to join us on the show between now and 4 o'clock. We've gone distinctly un-Halloween-y, haven't we? I got my first real six-string, bought it at the Five and Dime, played it till my fingers bled, was the summer of 69. Me and some guys from school had a band and we tried real hard. Jimmy quit, Jody got married, should've known we'd never get far. That's clever. I like that. We've got a little screen in the studio to tell us some of the stuff that's on. And the Wolves Blues game, they've written Wolves in orange and Blues in blue. It was very clever. Whoever did that, I'm very impressed. You've got too much time on your hands. Wolves versus Blues tomorrow. I'm with you tomorrow, actually, sitting in for Ian between 9 and 11.30. Shorter programme tomorrow to make way for the football. This Saturday, tomorrow, of course, 11.30, we've got a special live text commentary. You can listen to the commentary and get the text commentary as well, which is quite clever. bbc.co.uk/WM. That's tomorrow. It all starts at 11.30. I'll be with you between 9 and 11.30. And then Wolves versus Blues live here on BBC WM. Later on this afternoon, after me, from 4 o'clock, Franksy, warming up next door, reports from the scene of the Stafford fire. Those photos have been absolutely horrendous, haven't they? And looking ahead to this weekend's football as well, of course, that's all between 4 and 7 this afternoon, and then a special Haunted at 7 this evening. Richard Wilford presents a special Halloween version of the Sunday morning treasure hunt. Hunted becomes Haunted this evening from 7 o'clock.
This Saturday, it's the Brummy Black Country Derby. Wolves versus Blues from 12:15.
Birmingham City's the right challenge. Looking forward to getting my teeth into a job straight away.
We'll make a lot of noise and really get behind the team. A good game and an occasion that I'm looking forward to.
Listen live to our exclusive FM commentary.
Leon Clark might have scored the winner.
Check out BBC Sports live text commentary of the game online. Then from 3, hear live FM commentary of Leicester City versus the Baggies.
Berahinos, yes! Brilliant finish!
The station for commentary this season.
BBC WM 95.6.
Yeah, that's tomorrow for you here on BBC WM 95.6. Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee between now and 4. And if you want to get in touch, 03453 009956. One of the things we're talking about is costumes and when it's okay to dress up in costume and whether we should actually police that or not. A Birmingham nightclub has had to apologise for what they're calling a huge error of judgment in holding an Ebola themed party for Halloween. Bar Reese in Broad Street decorated the building with fake biohazard tape and warning signs. The club says the event was run by a third party. They've apologised and said they're going to be donating all profits to Doctors Without Borders. But these Halloween costumes, are they just a bit of harmless fun? Today, the government is calling on retailers not to sell Halloween costumes that demonise mental illness as well. If you've seen that one, other costumes available include Ebola and Islamic State outfits as well. So these are available. These are things that people can buy. In the shops, our reporter, Jordan Davis, has been out in Birmingham City Centre to show people the pictures and to see what they think.
Where would you draw the line? Because this year, some people are dressing as, for example, a member of IS, Islamic State.
Yeah. Shocking.
You're surprised by that?
That's absolutely shocking.
That's enough. It starts becoming Halloween, and then after that, it's just a bit stupid, I think.
Can I show you a picture? Because there are some quite extreme costumes out there, especially this year. What's your reaction to that?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's... Well, it's called a sexy Ebola nurse costume.
This is not funny, really, is it?
No, I think it's quite offensive as well.
You think that crosses the line?
Yeah, a little bit.
Can I show you another one?
Yeah.
That is supposed to be an Islamic State costume.
That's really bad. That's just really out of order.
Gaddafi.
You've gone as Gaddafi, have you?
No, I haven't gone. I've seen Gaddafi.
What was your reaction to that?
Who's going to get offended by it? And then somebody else went as a terrorist. So it was getting borderline offensive, but it was all right in the end.
Do you think you can cross the line with Halloween costumes?
Yeah, it's Halloween.
Can I show you a picture? Can I just explain what that is? That's an Ebola hazmat suit. Do you think that crosses the line?
Yeah, especially now because people are so, like, up in arms about it.
What about that one there?
No, it's like going as a zombie. A zombie's, are supposed to be a disease that's infected people, and so is Ebola. I think that'd be quite funny.
Yeah, one isn't real, obviously, and the other one is. So, I mean, that's a good starting point. I don't know. Do you know what? The jury's out for this on me. I don't know what you think. 03453 009956. Have you ever really been offended by a costume that somebody else has worn as a fancy dress party. I've got quite a low sort of being offended threshold anyway, and I kind of think, you know, I never put down to malice what I can put down to stupidity, so I kind of think, oh, well, if that's what they want to wear. The Ebola thing, I understand why people kind of get a little bit tetchy about that, and particularly when you put in hazardous tape on nightclubs and stuff like that, would confuse people because it's very current at the moment. But really, is there a costume out there, you know, whether it be zombies or Hitler or what was that guy saying, Colonel Gaddafi, who in themselves became a figure of parody? If you've seen the film with Sacha Baron Cohen, The Dictator, where he's, you know, that is a kind, it's a parody on that sort of stuff, isn't it, really? So, because he's like there awarding himself medals and all that kind of stuff, and the shoulders aren't big enough to get all the medals on, and the pips and the stars and all that sort of stuff. We're just making fun. It used to be okay to go to a party dressed as Hitler, and then somebody said, no, it's not anymore. And I don't know why. I don't know how it became bad. I don't know why it was a bad thing. Love to know what you think. Clowns are getting a real bad press at the moment. Have you seen this? It started in the United States, I understand. And now the town of Vendargue in southern France has gone as far as banning people. You are not allowed in Vendargue to dress up as a clown, because people have been doing exactly that and frightening the living daylights out of people who live there. Tony Eldridge is from Clowns International, which represents the clowns in Britain, and joins us on the show. Afternoon, Tony.
Oh, good afternoon.
How do you feel about this? Because this is your livelihood, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a great irritation. And, of course, we went through a lot of this a year ago when a young man in Northampton was running around dressed up as a clown and frightening people. And it wouldn't surprise me if this French affair hasn't been a copycat from what he was getting up to.
Well, meantime, and I just looked at it, I've just seen it online as well, meantime, in the United States, in California, for some reason, I don't know why it's West Coast America that seems to, you know, cash on with these kind of mad trends. I don't know, it's perhaps the heat or something, I'm not sure, but they're doing exactly the same. And just not doing anything, but just like dressing up in a kind of, you can probably describe it better than me, but kind of a scary clown stuff, yeah. You know, the Stephen King It. That's kind right. Of clown, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely right.
And just standing there, just watching people, doing nothing that you could really arrest them for or move them on for or prosecute them for, but just frightening people.
Yeah, I know. They're absolute nuisances. Public nuisances, I call them.
What do you call that, the scary clown thing? Is there a name for that at all? Is there this kind of, it's kind of this Halloween kind of clown?
Well, there's not a real name for it, but probably one could come up with one that's not repeatable on air.
If you're a clown and if you're trying to do business, I hear you.
Well, you know, these people are a nuisance, and of course it is bad, because the whole history of clowning is that clowns are there to amuse people and brighten up a day and not frighten them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting point I like to make with regard to, you know, appearances and association with professional clowns. There are codes of ethics that apply to being a clown. And one of them says, I will remove my makeup and change into my street clothes as soon as possible following my appearance, so that I cannot be associated with any incident which may be detrimental to the good name of clowning. I will conduct myself as a gentleman or lady at all times.
So you actually sign up to that. That's kind of the clown sort of code of conduct.
That's a code of conduct. So I make that point to say to the listeners that if you see clowns, or you think you see clowns, in the street, well, they're not real clowns, they're just nuisances dressed up in the fancy dress from the shop down the road.
So you'd welcome, because I'm just thinking, okay, you say that, I mean, there's no bad clown hotline, or, and I mean, you can imagine the response you get from the police if you phone up and said, oh, I think somebody's dressed as a clown down our street. I mean, you know, you wouldn't want people doing that either. So would you welcome what this French town has done and said, actually, we're making it part of the city ordinance or the laws or whatever, that you're banned. You can't do this.
No, it's a very tricky subject, obviously, because we've got fancy dress shops that sell this sort of thing and hire this sort of thing out. And until we got lumbered with all this business of scary clowns from this business that started up in America when a clown did, I'm afraid, knock off about 33 young lads and young men and started this killer clown business. I mean, we're a bit lumbered with that, but it would be difficult to stop people from dressing up in these costumes. questions any more than these other ones that you've just been discussing.
What's your thought as somebody who represents clowns internationally? What's your thought if I said, I'm off to a fancy dress party. Not tonight because it's Halloween, but I mean, just as a normal clown, I'm talking about now. What's your thought if I said I'm off to a fancy dress party, Tony, and I'm gonna go as a clown? Would you be upset? Would you be worried about that? Would you be upset about that?
Well, if they go into a party and they're going from one building to another and not walking through the streets, one could probably live with this, as I say. I mean, the fact is that a genuine clown won't go through the streets in costume.
No.
Because of what I've just now said.
So you are quite protective of the, for want of a better word, the brand, aren't you? You are fiercely protective of the,
oh, indeed,
the whole thing.
I mean, there's another ethical conduct code here saying I will not drink any alcoholic beverage prior to my clown appearance.
Right.
And I will abstain from drinking alcoholic beverages and smoking while in clown makeup and clown costume.
Mm.
And that goes on again to say that good conduct as a gentleman or a lady, it sounds a bit sort of po-faced, but I mean, this is what they say. Neither molesting or interfering with any other act, spectators or individuals. I mean, it's just the thing is that you're not there to frighten people, you're there to amuse them and make them laugh.
It's a serious business, clowning, isn't it? I do you know what I mean? Well, I say it is. I mean, you've got to take it serious if you're going to do it properly. Have you, because of this, though, have you started to see an impact? Have you started to see people say, I know we were going to book a clown for the party now, but my daughter and my son's absolutely petrified of them, or we're not so keen anymore. Are you seeing this affecting business now, Tony, or not?
I don't think it's had as big an impact as you might have thought. I think a bigger impact upon the business, if you like, has been the economic situation.
Right.
Because 10 years ago, there was a huge demand all the time for clowns to go to birthday parties and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But when the financial crisis came along, it was noticeable that members were beginning to take fewer bookings because people just didn't have the money to pay for entertainers at parties.
So where do we go with this then? Given on the one hand, you're saying, look, I wouldn't want to see people being banned from wearing clown costumes. If they want to wear them responsibly, that's up to them. But on the other hand, us professional clowns are operating within a reasonably strict code of conduct, and so we know what the expectations of the public are, and we won't frighten people. Where if I could say to you, right, okay, you tell me what you want, Tony, and I want to sort this problem out for you guys. What would you like me to do? Could you think of where we'd go with this?
Probably publicity from the point of view of just saying that this isn't considered acceptable behaviour. Because clown performers have got broad shoulders, and it's not really putting the business out of business. I mean, people still seem to like clowns. I've not encountered any problems when we've been having various events involving Clowns International, and I haven't heard from our members that they're being chased down the streets and being stoned by people who don't like them.
No.
Often, if you ignore some of these witless people, they go away because they like publicity. That's the first thing. They're publicity seekers.
Yeah, I wonder how much social media plays in all of this as well. It's because they then photograph themselves and stick it
I'm afraid so.
Stick it on Facebook or Twitter, don't they?
Yes, I mean, there are the benefits to social media, but unfortunately it's also open to misuse.
Yeah.
And we hear about it quite regularly with people being nasty on Twitter. But, the thing is that, as far as this country is concerned, there are Acts of Parliament. There's one called the Public Order Act 1987, and that's available to police to deal with any miscreants that are causing distress and one thing or another.
That's a good point. I never even thought of that. Tony, going to leave you there. Thanks for that. Tony Eldridge from Clowns International, who represents clowns in Britain. Let's talk to Keith in Bartley Green. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Shane. All right.
Yeah, talking about costumes.
I haven't spoken for a long time.
I know. It's good to have a chat. Give me a call tomorrow morning. We'll do two for the price of one.
Yeah.
what have you got for me on costumes? I'm confused. I don't know whether I would feel indignant and outraged and all the rest of it. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, the general thoughts, no, but I've got to be honest with you. I'm being truthful now. I know students have some, they go the limit and they've got some weird sense of humour. And they vote a party, I don't know. I think, you know, I'd find this a bit, under the current circumstances, in any case, I would find it very, very near the knuckle.
The Ebola thing you're talking about now, the whole Ebola
the thing. The same as somebody dressed up in an ISIS uniform, Islamic State uniform.
Yeah.
Because you could cause a lot... the way tension is at the moment,
yeah,
there's a lot of people in this country, especially Muslims, who obviously are getting blamed, moaned after like that, which they're not. I mean, a lot of Muslims are very peaceful, loving people. And, you know, it's I think, to be honest with you, it's pushing it to the limit.
So it's because it's current, that's where it's a problem. It's because it's because we're talking about it right now. It's a problem. I hear you. Keith, thanks for that. Good to talk to you, mate. 03453 009956 81333 on the text. Start your message, WM, to join us on the show this afternoon. What are your thoughts? Is it okay to go to a fancy dress party dressed as Hitler? That was 60 years ago. Has the time passed now? Is it about what's current? Is Keith right? Is it about what's happening now makes it offensive? My big thing is not putting enough people dressed as Olivia Newton-John, but then you look around you and you think, actually, probably I wouldn't want to wish that on anybody. Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee between now and four, so another hour of the show to go. So if you want to carry on the thing about costumes and fancy dress, I don't know if you've ever been to a fancy dress party and just thought, oh, no, I made a real mistake here. And are you offended by any of these costumes? Let's catch up with the latest travel this afternoon. I'm just going to take a wild guess. Liz Saul's got the latest for us.
Thanks, Shane. As you make your way onto the M6 going south, there's a lane out of vehicle has broken down at Junction 10. That's Wolverhampton and Walsall. As you make your way around Great Bridge, the A41, that seems to be queuing in both directions on the Black Country New Road. There's roadworks around Navigation Roundabout causing those queues on all approaches. Around Hagley, the A456 is looking very heavy going. Making your way around Stourbridge Road to the A491. If you can update us, call BBC WM 95.6 Travel 08453 00288.
Waking up the West Midlands with the latest news, sport, weather and travel updates. Pete Morgan at breakfast is back Monday morning from 6.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
BBC WM 95.6.
Still to come on the show this afternoon, you can hear how I got on when I talked to the craziest white witch I've ever spoken to. But at 3 o'clock on BBC WM, time to get the latest news. Here's Rob Mayer.
Good afternoon. Two people are still unaccounted for after a fireworks warehouse exploded in Staffordshire last night. Two other people were taken to hospital after it happened at SP Fireworks in Stafford. Firefighters from Consall, Cannock and Brood all attended the scene. Engineer Sam Johnson was working close by when it happened and had to break down a door to escape.
We were just about to leave our offices and there was a loud bang as I opened the door. Saw the ceiling in the next unit drop through, shut our door quite quickly and started to sort of make for an escape route. Didn't know that there was one up there, but unfortunately we couldn't get back out the door that I opened because, you know, there was too much debris in there.
An 82-year-old man who murdered his partner and her daughter at his puppy farm in Surrey has been sentenced to at least 25 years in prison. John Lowe shot Christine and Lucy Lee in February. The judge praised the extraordinary courage of Lucy Lee, who returned to face Lowe after a series of frantic 999 calls. Representatives of victims of child abuse have said they cannot work with the woman appointed to lead the investigation into the handling of past allegations. They were speaking after a meeting with inquiry officials to discuss their concerns about Fiona Wolfe. She's got links to the former Home Secretary Lord Britton. He denies failing to act on a dossier of abuse allegations. The man who killed Shropshire teenager Georgia Williams has lost an appeal against his whole life sentence. When he was sentenced just over a year ago, the court heard that Jamie Reynolds had the potential to become a serial killer and that he killed 17-year-old Georgia in a carefully planned and sadistic murder. Georgia's parents say they're very relieved by the appeal ruling, and her mum Lynette says Reynolds has shown no remorse.
I wasn't expecting anything off him. He's just cold. Inhumane how he is. He's ruined his family's life. He's ruined our family's life. He's ruined a girl's life that was real, sort of set out, and she was going to make an impression on the world.
West Midlands firefighters will take part in a four-day strike beginning at 6 o'clock this evening. It's the latest round of action in a national dispute over government changes to their pensions. It comes the weekend before Bonfire Night, one of the busiest times of the year. And Britain will pay back part of the outstanding debt incurred during the First World War when it redeems government bonds next year. The bonds were first issued in 1927 by Winston Churchill, who was Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time. The debt has not been paid off before now because of the relatively low interest. Looking at the weather, one or two sunny spells still out there this afternoon. Unseasonably warm with highs of 21 degrees Celsius, 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Tonight, very mild but breezy. A few spots of rain, lows of 12 degrees Celsius. That's 54 degrees Fahrenheit. BBC WM 95.6 News. There's more online at bbc.co.uk/WM.
Just Rob also does car repairs as well. I just wanted to just mention that. What did you fix? The what sensor was it?
The MAF sensor.
If you need your MAF sensor looking at it, Rob's your man as well. He
Shane
does a lot.
O'Connor.
On BBC WM
95.6.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know how he fits it all in. He's a busy, busy man. He's just off to go and fix a transit in the car park in between that and his next bulletin in about half an hour's time. Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee between now and four. Thanks for your company. We'll still talk about, if you want to talk about the costumes, by the way, 03453 009956. I'll be honest with you, I don't get it, but then I'm not connected to it. It's not something that is in my face and offends me. I can understand why people get offended by certain costumes, but I don't really get it. Do you know what I mean? That's where I'm at with that. The whole, I was just having a chat with Joe, my producer, during the news. The whole Hitler thing, I don't know why it is now not acceptable. I mean, I get it. I get why people say, and because of what Hitler did and all the rest of it, but why it was not acceptable to parody that kind of evil and parody that kind of, when did parody become wrong to do? I grew up in a kind of environment where you'd watch Spike Milligan. Spike Milligan wore a Nazi uniform more often than the Nazis did. And you'd see Tommy Cooper would do it on the TV. Freddie Starr would do it on the TV. And then one day we all woke up and it wasn't okay. We're talking about costumes and whether it's okay to dress up as a, we're not quite sure what a sexy Ebola nurse is. Somebody who treats people with sexy Ebola, I guess. I mean, I don't really know. But, you know, you kind of have these costumes. They're just the product of people who are, like, a little bit lazy with the imagination, aren't they? Surely. But are they offensive? 03453 009568 1333 on the text, start your message WM. And there's a cracking story coming up in this hour as well. Nurses recruited from overseas to work at a Wolverhampton hospital have been given Black Country dialect lessons. Mate of mine, Scottish. And we used to play in a band together, and we used to go around the Black Country, and he couldn't understand a word you were saying in the Black Country. I have to say, in fairness, you in the Black Country couldn't understand a word of his Scottish accent either, so it was kind of tit for tat, really, and you did okay with it. But I just wonder this afternoon, do you think that is offensive? Do you think that's a bit of a laugh? Do you think that overseas students, people coming from other countries to work here and work in the Black Country, need lessons in the Black Country dialect? Because we use other phrases. They're taught things like cake hole. I've got a favourite, and I don't know whether it's because I was born and brought up on the border. I was born in Warsaw. I lived in Great Bar as a youngster, so I don't really know whether I'm Black Country. See, when I was born in Warsaw, it was in Staffordshire, darling, and it was all a lot posher. So I don't really know whether I'm Black. Am I Black Country? I don't know. I haven't got a clue. Which one I would be if I was classed with either one or the other, so I'm not quite sure. If I want to be posh, I tell people I was in Great Bar, and if I don't, then I say it was Warsaw. I don't know, or it's the other way around. I can't remember which way it is. But some of the phrases, I'm not sure whether they're Birmingham or Black Country, but I know what they're talking about with the whole Black Country phrase thing. If you've got a favourite, if you want to share some of your favourite phrases this afternoon, then be my guest, 03453 009956. What do you think of the idea of overseas students being taught the dialect? I suppose, I mean, what are we teaching? Are we teaching the dialect or are we teaching them the words in an accent? We're going to talk to a Black Country poet in a little while. But I'd love your thoughts on that one. Do you, as somebody who lives maybe in Dudley or Briley Hill or Wolverhampton, can I have this kind of thing where you have to, if you go out of the area, have to explain yourself a little more clearly than if you're maybe around your home territory? 81 probably best you text this afternoon. I'm not going to understand a word you're saying otherwise. 81 I'm kidding. 81333. Start your message WM to join us. 03453 009956. And let me know your thoughts on that one. Should we be teaching overseas students and workers the Black Country dialect? And then where does it stop? I mean, if you do that, should you do that for Birmingham as well? Let me know.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70. Baby, my heart could still fall less hard at 23. And I'm thinking about how people fall in love in mysterious ways. Maybe just the touch of a hand. Well, me, I fall. Honey, now take me into your loving arms. Kiss me under the light of a thousand stars. Place your head on my beating heart. I'm thinking now. My hair's all but gone and my memory fades, and the crowds don't remember my name. When my hands don't play the strings the same way, I know you will still love me the same. 'Cause honey, your soul could never grow. Baby, your smile's forever in.
Ed Sheeran, Thinking Out Loud on BBC WM 95.6. Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee between now and four. Love your thoughts on this one, this idea that the Black Country dialect... I'm guessing what we're saying is that the Black Country dialect is a little bit hard to understand, he says, trying to put it into... into English. Do you get that? Seriously, I'll never forget these conversations. I used to be like an interpreter in the middle, so I got my Scottish mate on the one hand and whoever we were talking to on the other, and I'm trying to do it in a way that wasn't embarrassing, you know, so either party wasn't thinking I haven't got a clue what they're saying and the other one's thinking I haven't got a clue what they're saying either, and I try and do it in such a way that nobody felt bad about not understanding each other. So my Scottish friend would say, "Oh, it's warm out tonight, isn't it?" And the person from the Black Country would say, "Oh yeah," kind of just not really knowing what was going on. Say, "Yeah, it is. It's you saying it's warm, isn't it? It's warm out." And like, and it kind of, so you have this conversation, which was like something from Les Dawson across the three. But I don't know. You must get that when you're out. What do you do? Do you change your dialect, change the accent, make sure that it's not too bad at all? I had a fascinating text from Leela this afternoon. I said, I want to talk to Leela because Leela, who texted me on 81333, start your message at WM, you're a speech therapist, Leela.
Yes, that's right.
Brilliant to talk to you this afternoon. Now, you're a speech therapist in Dudley.
Yeah, so that's right. It has its unique challenges in Dudley, and I've had to do a lot of learning in terms of... it is a dialect. It is a complete dialect. You've got the English language,
yes,
and you've got the dialect, and it's amazing because the one thing about the people in the Black Country is that they talk to you like they know exactly what they're saying, and you can look at them and just not get anything of what they've said.
Yeah, because you're not understanding it, are you? That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So I should say, actually, to make you feel at home, you actually are a speech therapist in Dudley. Now, here's the killer question for you. What do you do? When you're trying to help people with their speech, do you try and get them to speak, I don't know, RP, the Queen's English, whatever, or do you go with the flow, with the accent? Do you say that's okay, or what? What do you do?
Well, I like to take a naturalistic approach in the sense that I'm not going to try and change somebody's dialect or their accent, because that's what makes them and that's their identity.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have to take that away from them, but it's about making the speech a bit clearer, so people who've had strokes and head injuries, they've still got an identity. It's just that their speech isn't as clear anymore, or maybe they're not understanding language as well as they used to.
Mm.
So I just go with what they're used to and try to look at communication as a whole rather than focusing on, you know, particular words or certain elements of the dialect. So and it does work, and I find I live and work in Birmingham as well, and I've lived in Birmingham most of my life.
Mm.
I've got a slight Brummy accent, but I find myself now working in Dudley completely picking up the Dudley accent.
Yeah.
And I find that people understand me better.
so you actually, you tune in and plug into them rather than expecting them to speak,
yes,
more slowly for you. That's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, because obviously, I suppose, because you're the one providing the therapy, so you need to make them feel comfortable, I guess.
Well, that's it. And it, like I said, it's not about changing what people are.
Mm.
It's about making sure that they're reintegrated into their life and that they don't feel isolated. And you don't have to speak to communicate. So, it's focusing on that more. But it's fantastic. I've worked in a lot of places, and London included, and there's no friendlier people than you've got in the Black Country.
No. And I mean, obviously, they'll always say hello. When they're leaving, they'll say ta-ra.
Yeah, ta-ra-da-bit.
Ta-ra-da-bit. And do you know what? In my own mind, I'm a bit like you. I don't know what part of Birmingham you're from, but I'm born and bought. So I was born in Walsall. Technically, I suppose I'm born in Walsall when it was part of Staffordshire, but then lived in Great Barr.
Right.
And I'm not really. It all merges into one as a kind of the dialect. I don't know what's Birmingham. I don't know what's Black Country. There are some very obvious ones, but it is a bit of a mishmash now, isn't it? I guess.
Yeah, definitely. But I noticed that there's a dialect. The Black Country, as well as an accent, whereas Brummies, I find, just have the accent.
Just explain to me, as a professor, what's the difference between a dialect...
Oh, now you're testing me.
Oh, now you've got to think back to university, haven't you? There, I tell you,
yeah.
Kid, we knew it was going to be difficult, but we didn't know it was going to be this, so we're going to start at basics. I mean, I know what an accent is, but how does that differ? Is a dialect also including speech as well in the words that you use?
So, to me, a dialect, you'd have to look in the dictionary, definitely, but to
I'll
me...
I'll do it while you're talking. I'll have a look now. Go on.
A dialect is a modification of a particular language. So, you've got English, but then a dialect will be... You've got the same meanings, but the words are slightly different. So, there's a modification to the language, whereas an accent is literally how it sounds.
Right, okay.
You've got speech and then you've got language, so two different elements of that. So we could all speak English, but if you were from Newcastle, you'll have a different dialect and you'd use certain words that in the Black Country, you've got the same meaning, but a different word.
I suppose dialects as well, you're moving on to... phrases as well that are used,
yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah,
I guess
yeah.
That it includes that it's not just like it's like patois, isn't it? It's that kind of is dialectal rather than language, I guess, or it's the same language, but you can't understand it because it's heavily dialect driven. I mean, does that must in your work then? I mean, when you're trying to rehabilitate people, Leela, that can be a barrier for you, can't it? A dialect.
Well, yeah, sometimes it can be, and language as well can be a barrier sometimes. But
right. Like
I was saying, you could be completely mute and still be able to communicate. And
yeah.
There are people who lose their speech completely and aren't able to verbally communicate, but can communicate in other ways. So it's looking at speech and language make up communication, but it's looking at wider ways to communicate as well, depending on how much of your speech or language has been lost.
So while people are having a bit of a titter about this idea that New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton is going to, they've launched an overseas recruitment drive, and as part of that, they're actually going to give people a crash course in the Black Country dialect. That to me, I mean, from what you're saying, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it can be quite sort of alienating initially because you're trying to get as much information as you can from people, and to you it's like, you know, to the unknown ear, it's like being in a completely different country. How are you going to try and understand it? And ultimately you're going to try and help those people, and you want to get as much information from them in as quick as time as possible, especially for the doctors and the nurses. So anything that can help that, go for it.
Do you think, I mean, is there a fear for, I don't know whether it's a fear of offending or upsetting people or whatever, is there a fear to say to people, I'm sorry, I don't know, what's that? And then, because, I mean, I do that all the while. If people say a word to me and I think, well, I never heard that one before, and I'll say, what was that you said there? And that in itself provides an interest in the individual. So I don't see that as a bad, I see that as a positive rather than a negative. You must do that all the while, mustn't you, and say... Because I'm just looking at a list of some of the names. Some of them I know, and some of them I've never heard before. Arbist is how are you, like how you been, I suppose, is a derivative of it. I've never heard of that. And I just, if somebody said that to me, I'd say, go on, no, sorry, I didn't understand that. Do you do that as well?
Yeah, I think it's better to be honest than to just nod and appear like you understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think then you know, and then you don't have to ask again, and then you're not missing out on something, because ultimately that's what you're interacting with, a person so that you can help them. And if you can't understand them or understand what they're trying to say, then you're not helping them.
All right. You didn't know there's going to be a test before you came on the show this afternoon. And I really feel bad because you sent me a fabulous text. And I just said to Joe, I said, oh, can we talk to Leela? Because I think she could add quite a lot to the conversation. And then I thought, oh, now we're testing you. So here you go. Do you know the definitions of the following words? Shout them up if you do. You ready?
Yeah.
Blart.
That's crying.
Well done. Bost.
Yeah.
As in, I bossed it?
I broke it.
Broke it, well done. Boston, obviously we know, we all know that. I'm very good, yeah. Here's one, Chobble.
Is that chew or eat?
Very, very good. That's I remember, and I don't, it was an uncle that I had, oh, years and years ago, long gone now, God rest him, but he used to refer to sweets as rocks.
And right, yeah.
And I remember, don't chobble your rocks. Which
I'm going to use that one.
Seriously. Collywobbles, I've got the collywobbles.
The shivers, I think.
Yeah, kind of not feeling very well, isn't it? Is
yeah.
That, you know. He's Jed?
No, I don't know about that one.
You need to learn that one. He's dead.
Oh, right.
That could seriously hamper your work, couldn't it? and a nuss?
No idea.
Which is really just accent thing. I think he's a nurse, they're saying here as well.
Nurse.
Finally, you're wazzing. Do you know what I've never heard of this one in my life.
Oh, yeah, I've heard this once. Is it the throat?
Well done. Well, Leela, I'm so impressed, mate. I think you've done really well this afternoon.
you really
have. Listen, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
You too.
And thanks for being such a good sport. That's Leela, who's a speech therapist. And he sees the sense. You know, I think it's quite interesting, isn't it, to see the sense. In why you would want to do that. Let's just get another perspective, though. We'll have a quick chat with Black Country poet Brendan Hawthorne. Joins us on the show this afternoon. Hi, Brendan.
Hiya,
I'm Boston. I have to say, I'm hoping you got all of those right. You're on trust now. Did you get all of those?
Of course I did, if the previous caller needs a really good book, I've got a book out on it, so, you know.
She's fab. I thought she was really, you know, as a speech therapist, and she's saying, you know, she kind of really goes the extra mile to make feel
absolutely.
People feel comfortable with it. Do you know, there was a couple in there I'd never heard of, and I thought, you know, as a lad who was born in Walsall many years ago, I should have done, shouldn't I?
Here's one for you. What about if you forgot your gamp?
Is that... I'm tempted to say the one that my dad uses all the while, which I think maybe is that an Irish thing, the Gansey, your Gansey. Is that a similar
kind of
thing? Your jumper then, no?
No. You need a gamp when it's raining, it's your umbrella.
Your gamp? What the heck's the origin of that one? Where does that come from?
I've no idea. It's just pure old Black Country, that's what it is.
Your gamp? No,
yeah. No,
I've never heard of that. I tell you one, and I don't know whether it's Black Country Birmingham. I know you joined us a bit late, Brendan. I don't know whether you heard that, being sort of part Walsall, part Birmingham. I'm not sure which is which. And I don't even know if it's a Midlands thing, but we used to say in our house all the while, it's walking, meaning that it was large.
You know, it is strange that, because some of my family, sort of going back a couple of generations, I've got Lancashire connections.
Right.
And I have to be careful that I'm not sort of bringing up old Lancashire words.
Right.
But there's a word that we used to use in our house, which was fossicking.
You filthy swine. Fossicking?
This is if you're looking for something and you're just hunting round aimlessly.
Okay. Yeah, like a fertile kind of word, isn't it?
That's kind of.
Yeah.
Now, I found out that that's actually an old Cornish mining term.
Fossicking.
Yeah, and of course we got mines up here, so that wouldn't be anything, you know, too far removed from the Cornish miners coming up, you know, into this area.
Okay.
And words.
So do you think walking might be an import then?
It could very well be, and I found out that fossicking also exists in Northumberland.
Oh, right, okay.
So it must just travel completely across the country.
So, yeah, well, that's what happens. When people travel, then the language travelled, didn't it?
That was
how it worked, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just before I forget, if anyone else has heard of the word, did you use it in your house, walking? Give us a call on the show, 03453-00956. Give us a call if you did. We'll see if we can figure out if it was just our family or if anybody else did it as well.
Certainly not in Tipton, no.
Do you try and use these old words, the words that possibly might be forgotten if you don't keep them going? Do you try and use those in your poetry, Brendan?
I do, yeah. I mean, I write in dialect as well as standard English. Mind you, some people who've heard me perform might, you know, not recognise standard English as it is. Because obviously, you know, you've still got an accent even if you're, you know, using dialect or old language words, you know.
And do you know what I find fascinating is people don't have the patience with Shakespeare because they can't get to grips with the language. Do you find that becomes a barrier to your poetry?
Funnily enough, no. The only place I've actually had anybody comment that they couldn't understand me was in Birmingham.
They've just got no effort at all, have they, the Brummies? What are they like?
I've been all over the place, even in Wales. I mean, there's a guy in Wales who saw me perform. He actually said, you weren't born too far from Prince's End, were you? And this is a guy who was beautiful baritone South Wales dialect accent.
Yeah.
And he just come over to me, and he was within a mile of where I was born by the type of accent I'd got, and it was just incredible.
Do you do a kind of a double take with your poetry as well when you're reading? And I always love to hear poets read their own poetry, because there's something special about somebody. It's like It's like a singer songwriter singing their own song, isn't it? Or singing somebody
Absolutely.
Else's song. It's a world of difference. But when you're reading stuff, do you ever like do subtitles? Do you like to do an explanation on the next line or not? Do you have to not have to go that far?
Funnily enough, I always ask people if they have problems with it to come and talk to me, because I think the most important thing is that we talk it through, you know, and people go away knowing a little bit more about the region and its traditions and its language and everything else. So I'm really up for promoting the region. But on the other hand, I mean, I've written a song which starts off with, we say, our best and our dust, you've been your bay and it's bust.
Right.
And I just say, this is for anybody who's from out of the area. And immediately, it's just a crash. The whole thing is a crash course in black country dialect in four verses, you know.
Do you know what strikes me about that as well is the rhythm of it?
Yeah.
It's got a real cadence. I never even noticed it before. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I'll probably get chased out of town now saying this, but I do sometimes, I kind of get a bit ashamed of the black country accent and think it's a little bit ugly and a little bit clumpy, but it has a rhythm, doesn't it? But
it does.
Is it just because I'm used to it that it doesn't sound sexy and mysterious?
My personal take on that is that when it's used in isolation, when it's just used as an odd term, and it's sort of just thrown out, it can sound a little bit misplaced. But when you actually start teaming it up with, you know, other words and phrases which have got the same meter and, as you say, the same rhythm, it starts to sound really good. You know, it starts to sound... There are sing-along dialects, you know, like a lot of the Dudley accents are very sing-along, and they've got not only rhythm, but they've also got intonation, and it's absolutely beautiful when it's all run together.
Do you think... Is it affected in a way? I used to work with a guy who, instead of saying I... would replace it with the word we. So he'd say, you can't... Or, sorry, not me. He used to replace me with the word we. He'd say, you can't treat we like that. And I'd think, why are you saying that? Because even... And I just wondered whether he was, like, kind of being... You know, he's trying to be extra black country. You know? Do you know what I mean?
No, that was commonly used when I was growing up. And obviously, it may have been just a misplaced sort of... subject in the sentence. But my granddad, and I don't know whether this is where it may stem from, he was what I call a thee, thou and thine man. So he used to say, you know, thee bist,
right,
thou bay. And he obviously coming from a couple of generations back, but he got a very, very old dialect, a very old way of pronouncing things.
Have you got a rush off? Have you? Are you in a rush at the moment? Are you?
No, I'm all right.
You haven't got a poem you could read or so? Because I've got to go to a break. I've got to get the travel and the headlines. But can you just fertile out a poem for us and give us?
I've got one in my head. I can do straight off for you.
All right, hold on there. Hold that thought. Keep your fingers in your ears. Don't let it leak out your head. And we'll be back. We'll be back with Brendan Hawthorne in a second. I didn't want to waste all that talent. Let's get the latest travel news. Liz Saul's got the details.
Thank you very much, Shane. As you head to the M42, there's still a lane shut as a car has broken down between 5 and 6. That's the Solihull exit to the Birmingham Airport turn, the A45. The congestion is back to 3A at the M40 interchange. It's lane 1 that's closed. South on the M42 is lane blocked on the exit slip road. Trying to get onto the M5 heading north, a vehicle has broken down there, and that's causing quite a bit of congestion. The M5 itself is heavy going as you head north trying to get onto the M6 and the M6 southbound. Very slow going, not helped by a vehicle which broke down earlier at junction 10. Although it was cleared out of the way reasonably quickly, the congestion is back into the roadworks around junction 12, so 12 to 10 is looking very slow. Holiday Road in Handsworth still shut, police dealing with an incident around Marafat Lane causing some disruption. It's queuing on the A41, the Black Country New Road in both directions around the A461, and navigation roundabout not helped by roadworks. If you can update us, 08453 00228.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
BBC WM 95.6.
Thanks, Liz. It's 29 minutes to four. Let's get the latest news this afternoon. Here's Rob Mayer.
Good afternoon. Fire crews say they could be at a fireworks warehouse in Stafford until the middle of next week. Two people are still missing there after a fire last night. A 53-year-old man's been arrested. Representatives of victims of child abuse have said they can't work with the woman appointed to lead the investigation into the handling of past allegations. They were speaking after a meeting with inquiry officials to discuss their concerns about Fiona Wolfe, who has links to the former Home Secretary Lord Britton. He denies failing to act on a dossier of abuse allegations. An 82-year-old man who shot dead a mother and daughter at his puppy farm in Surrey has been sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 25 years. John Lowe killed Christine Lee and Lucy Lee on the 23rd of February. He was found guilty earlier this week. And the Labour leader, Ed Miliband, is to announce that he would transfer billions of pounds from Westminster to cities like Birmingham and regions like the West Midlands if he wins the election. He'll be speaking about the plans live on Drive Time with Paul Franks from 4 o'clock here on BBC WM 95.6. Looking at the weather, one or two sunny spells left this afternoon, unseasonably warm as well. Highs of 21 degrees Celsius at 70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Thanks, Rob.
The voice.
The voice.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country. BBC WM 95.6.
It's Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee between now and four. When you left us, if you were with us a little while ago, we're having a fascinating conversation with poet Brendan Hawthorne about the Black Country accent. And this idea that I think it's New Cross Hospital,
yeah,
that are going to try and train overseas staff and give them sort of pointers and tips and words for the Black Country accent. Before we said if you could hang on and do a poem, we get a poem from you as well. But the idea itself, do you like that idea? Do you think, I mean, it's a way of keeping the language alive as well again, isn't it?
Absolutely, I do. And I think that the more people can tie into the regional, it's not just about the language, is it? It's about the traditions as well and all of that sort of thing. And I think if people are going that extra little bit to accommodate the people, the communities that they're entering into, I think that's absolutely fantastic.
I've got a couple on the text for you. I want to test you as well. Cagmag?
Cagmag.
Yeah. I've never heard of that,
but that's rattling around somewhere in the back of my head, and I can't think of it just now.
This is from Jace, who says he's on his way wum. he said it's rubbish.
That's what he said.
Cagmag. It's rubbish. It's the one he says.
Cagging as well is about talking.
Now again, I've got another word from my mum used to use all the while from my childhood. Canting.
Canting. Yeah.
Is that Birmingham or is that Black Country?
That was certainly used in the Black Country when I was in the 60s, certainly, and I know my granddad used it, so that's going back a bit further as well.
Because she was King Standing, so but there was a crossover, isn't there? There's a crossover between Birmingham and the Black Country as well. I'm assuming it's because of work and because of the fact that people, you know, lived in one and worked in the other or travelled about or whatever. You got a poem for us, haven't you, as well? You're going to do one for us?
Yeah, just a quick one, really. I've sort of mentioned my granddad, so it seems sort of pertinent to carry on about him.
Mm.
He was a glassblower at Stevens and Williams, and he died off spike, funny. My grandfather was 90-odd when he died, and he died off spike, funny. Dicey a doctor till he was 84. All as fat and fit he was, but he died look after himself, not a bit on it. He was a glassblower, you know. 55 years loyal to Stevens and Williams off Lower Church Lane, Tipton. When he worked days, he'd be home at 2. Saying he'd been drinking with the Prince Regent, or in the Prince Regent, I can't remember now. But he'd sit there waiting for his dinner, his bald head glowing like a furnace fire. And as he finished the last mouthful, he'd send me to the shops for his fare. He'd say, go to the shop, Woolest. Oh, bang to go in, I'd cry, chat. Yow, Bing, get yourself some suck on the way. So, Briar, for a threatening lucky bag, I'd fetch his fare, trapped discreetly in a brown paper bag. And as he took him off me, he'd say, yow, bang, a bad and bisson. Now go and play and leave me to be smokes. So off I'd go to the bottom of the garden, sitting under the lilac, sucking on a toffee as hard as a rock. And he'd disappear into a blue fog. Even the budgie's cuff was as bad as his, but it died matter then, and my booth dead now, and my grandfather, well, he died off spike for me.
Oh man, that is awesome! Do you know what it is? One of those. Do you record your poetry as well? Do you ever kind of put it in a you know the way they do with speaking books as well? Because you would probably, if you didn't know the accent, you'd probably lose a lot out of that, wouldn't you? If you didn't you know if you didn't know the accent, didn't know the dialect. A couple I've got to mention because I thought they were great. A bit of Suck Sweet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which you see, we used to be rocks with us, chobbling your rocks.
Yeah, chobbling that was a big word. Yeah. That's how you ended up with your fillings, if you chobbled.
If you chobbled your rocks or chobbled your suck or whatever, yeah. And the one I've really got to take issue with, because I think it's baldest, is I haven't got a lot of hair, and they call it a bald yed. I think that's just awful, Brendan, I'll be honest with you. Fascinating stuff. You got some books out now, have you? Where can you get hold of them?
Yeah, I've obviously got poetry out there and CDs and stuff, but I've also recently done a book on Black Country dialect, which is published by Bradwell's.
I love it.
So it's available in most supermarkets and bookstores.
You're a very talented man, Bren, and I really appreciate you being with us this afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for giving me some time.
I love it. I don't know why our paths have never crossed before. Brendan Hawthorne, Black Country poet, joining us on the show this afternoon. I'm so glad that we took the time just to say, look, read us a poem, will you, before you go. Get your money's worth, that's what I like to think. And thanks for all your texts, by the way. 81333, start your message WM if you want to send me any other Black Country phrases through. Great to hear from you. Bob joins us. Hiya, Bob.
Oh, well, mate, how you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. It says Bob in Burton here, but you sound like you're a long way from Burton, mate.
Well, I live there now, I'm happy to say.
Yes.
But I'm a bit like you, really. I don't know where I belong. I was born in Smethwick, born and brought up in Smethwick.
Yeah.
And, you know, which has, like you, it's on the outskirts of the Black Country. And I was always told I was Black Country, but I never really got to the bottom of it. And another thing I was told is, well, to be Black Country, you got to be born within 5 miles of a church in the centre of Dudley.
Oh, so I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, so that puts you on me out to the ball game.
Well, it's weird, isn't it, how you can... I think it's because it's such a big area now and has been for all of our lifetines that you do kind of think, well, where do I fit in all of this? I'm not really quite sure.
Well, that's right, but the only time I'm a bit like you, I get embarrassed, actually, about my accent, because I try and talk posh and I sound like a prat. But, if I'm talking to people, say in a hotel or something, you see, I sound in my age then, they say, oh, I know, where are you from? I said, I bet you don't. And I say, yeah, you're a Brummie, and God, you know, that's worse than being Black Country.
Do they call you an 021er?
No, they don't call me that. They call you a yam yam.
Oh.
And I said I'm a yo yo.
You see, because my dad lives in Barton under Needwood. And and that's just like Birmingham. It's full of Brummies. The place is even with them.
Really?
Yeah.
Barton, eh?
And they all call them 021ers. Oh, another 021er.
You know, I've never heard of that phrase.
Yeah.
Anyway, just before you go, just a phrase to keep you thinking.
Please.
A Black Country guy said to me years ago, he said, Bob, it ain't what it is, it's what it a is.
It ain't what it is, it's what it a is. Yeah, that's Black Country logic, isn't it? Before you go, then here's one for you. What about walking? You ever heard the word walking?
Walking.
Meaning huge. Oh, it was walking.
Walking. I've heard walking.
No, walking.
Not walking, no. Walking,
Oh, okay. It was just.
I can't get that in my bonds, mate.
That's it. Must have just happened in our house. That's all I can think. Bob, good to talk to you, mate.
And you, mate.
Give my love to Burton. That's Bob in Burton, exiled up there. Although now he seemed quite pleased. Actually, he's up there.
The Ed Doolan Christmas Show.
Would you welcome to the stage
winners of Britain's Got Talent, Calabro. Safe behind home. Birmingham comedy legend, Jasper Carrot.
I've got a marvellous mother-in-law. She's a test pilot in the broom factory.
Black Country comedian, Doug Parker.
We've had some tough times in Wolverhampton, mate. Even the advent calendars are boarded up.
And more big names still to be announced. The Ed Doolan Christmas Show. Friday, the 12th of December at the Symphony Hall, Birmingham from 11 a.m. Tickets cost £5 plus a transaction fee. Call 0121 345 0600 or visit thsh.co.uk.
BBC WM
95.6.
I like that Black Country comedian. He's quite, just on the basis of that, I heard that recently when I was here before sitting in for Franksy. And I saw Don Doolan this afternoon, actually. It was nice to see Ed doing his thing. Nice suit on today as well. Don't forget you can get your tickets for that. On the text this afternoon, 81333, start your message WM to join us on the show. Shane, why do they loose you down instead? Stephen, this is on the text. Why do they loose you down instead of let you down? Well, you've really loosed me down with that one there. Yeah, like that one. And Dave said, I was born in Neachalls, but I now live in... Oh, Dave, you poor devil. I bet you don't know which way you are, do you? He said, so I've got a right old mixture. That's Dave on the text this afternoon. Born in Neachalls, now lives in Oldbury. Hasn't got a clue what he is.
Now, excuse me if I sound rude, but I love the way that you move, and I see me all over you now. Baby, when I look in your eyes, there's no way that I can disguise all these crazy thoughts in my mind now. You got the lie. You got me under. I see fireworks when we touch now. Your body fits on mine like a glove. Let them say whatever they want. It's too late cause you're in my blood.
Linda says those born in Smethwick come from Staffordshire, not Birmingham. Is that right? They changed the boundary, didn't they? Staffordshire, because I remember Walsall was in Staffordshire, wasn't it? And he got booted out for not being posh enough or something. I can't remember what the details were. Oh 3453 00956. Anything to throw in, or if you want to do what Linda's done and drop me a text, 81333 on the text. Start your message WM. It's Shane O'Connor sitting in for Ian Lee. And tomorrow as well, if you're around tomorrow morning, you want to join me between 9 and 11:30. Shorter one tomorrow because we've got Wolves versus Blues. We've got that coming at you live from 11:30 and the special live text commentary as well at bbc.co.uk /WM. So we've got that tomorrow and I'll be with you as well. And I'll be with you next week on Friday and Saturday. So if you're around tomorrow, join us and keep the number handy and we'll have a chat. Let's talk to Steve in Dudley who joins us on the show. Hello, Steve.
Hello there, you're right.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm just in Dudley for work. I'm not from Dudley, I'm from Wolverhampton. You made me laugh really when you said walking. That word walking.
Yes.
Well, My grandfather, bless him, he probably used a different term to you, meaning something different, but it'd be like, in a sentence, it'd be like, hey, Steve, I saw your kid the other day, earlier on, the staff around, and says, was he on the bus? He said, no, he was walking.
It's not the same thing, is it?
Same but different, and you know what a gazunder is?
Yes, I do. Tell everybody that doesn't know. Come on, because don't go on.
The potty, is it? What we used to call a potty, because it goes under the bed. And, you know what they call a bit of pork pie on Wolverhampton Town Hall clock?
Go on.
Summer to eight.
You said, and here's something, I'm going to pick you up on something next. I'm going to tell that one tonight when I get home. Something to eat. You said, I'm not from Dudley, I'm from Wolverhampton. Are you suggesting, was the inference there, because do you know what I immediately picked up, was you were saying, don't you dare class me with the people from Dudley, I'm from Wolverhampton, and I'm not was I imagining that?
No, I've not got a problem with people from Dudley.
You've got to go back Monday, haven't you? That's why you're saying that. I know.
No,
I hear.
No. I've gone really posh now. So I live in Shrewsbury.
Oh, I say. And how do you get? What do you do? Do you take an interpreter or what? How does that work?
No, they need. If my brother comes over to Shrewsbury and we go out for a drink, when we've had a few, and we both, my brother's got quite a posh job, so he's quite well spoken. And I live in Shrewsbury now, so my Black Country accent's been diluted a bit.
Right.
But when we've had a few bevvies and we get chatting between us, they can't understand the way I'm saying.
No. What are they? I kind of think Shrewsbury now is like a kind of mismatch because it was like a big sort of junction where people travelled through. I mean, I know it's kind of like what is their accent like now in Shrewsbury? Have they got much of an accent still or not?
It's sort of. They say things like canny and dinner, and you know what I mean? It's a bit like that, but you know, you can tell I'm not from Shrewsbury.
Where does it sound like? Where is it close to? Is it heading towards Cheshire, heading towards Liverpool, or that kind of way? Or
Shrewsbury's in Shropshire.
I know, but where is it?
Street.
Where's the accent heading towards? Do you know what I mean by that? It's like kind of, you know.
I'd say it's sort of going. It gets more broad when you go sort of Ridge North and you know the Ironbridge.
Right. Okay.
It expands from that, if you know what I mean. And one way from Ironbridge, it went sort of Wolverhampton way and got sort of like that, really broad like that.
Mm.
And then the other way, there's sort of an Oswald Street twang, and it went into a bit of a straw in the mouth type accent, you know, all that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, because I don't really... I'm basing it basically on the spin-off from Only Fools and Horses, the Green Grass. Is it the Green Grass or something? Locals there, they all... And I'm thinking, well, I don't know whether that's true or not. I have no idea, but I couldn't actually pin that down. I'm quite good with accents, and I can normally say to people, oh, I know where you're from, you're from there, you're from there. I think I'd struggle with Shrewsbury, you know. I don't know. I'm going to have to let you go, because I can't understand a word you're saying, though, all right?
Yeah, I'll be aware of you.
Cheers, Steve. Have a good weekend, mate.
Take care.
Steve in Dudley. Not a clue. Trevor's in Darlaston. Hiya, Trevor.
Good afternoon, Shane.
How are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, not so bad. I've heard of walking. Isn't that what state of flow did? Walking all over the world.
Do you know, I'm getting the impression you're not taking me seriously anymore now, is it?
That fella was on, he was born in Birmingham, and he lives in Albury, and he don't know what he is.
Yeah, he don't know what he is. And now he lives in Burton, so he's even more confused. Yeah, go on.
Confused.com, yeah. I was actually born in Ipswich.
Well, I would never have guessed that.
No, hang on. At 6 weeks old, I was took to London, and I lived there till I was seven.
North or south of the river?
East.
You are contrary, aren't you? What part?
I am.
Where were you? West Ham? Where were you? What part of
East Ham.
East Ham. All right, okay, yeah.
Then we moved out to Essex.
Nice.
And then...
Out to the countryside.
Yeah, and then my dad done a complete full circle and moved us back to Ipswich when I was 16. And I've been up here
I've been up here since 1990, I have. So,
do you know what I think is quite interesting with accents particularly? I'm quite fascinated as to why, particularly when you're in your teenage years, Trev, why you don't... Because you want to fit in, don't you, when you're a teenager? Why you don't pick up those accents? Did you find your accent changing or not?
Well, people still reckon I talk a bit like... London, but I don't think I do.
Oh, yeah, you're very Chas and Dave, mate.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. What part of Essex were you in?
We lived just outside a place called Colchester.
Right, OK. So quite deepest Essex then, wasn't it? Because I was thinking, I wonder whether you were kind of just like on the, you know...
Oh, you're about Romford or Dagenham or somewhere like that.
Or even kind of Upminster, you know, that kind of, like, you know, sort of on the borders and you're still London there, aren't you, really? I don't know, but...
Romford's part of London, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Everything's part of London now, isn't it? Yeah, fascinating. Yeah. How do you get on with... When you talk to people around here now, when you're in Darlaston or wherever, do you struggle with the accent and the dialect?
No. I can tell a Brummie from a black country person, no problem.
See, I think I struggle with that sometimes, so it just shows you...
When I first went home with the missus, because she's from up here, she's from Portobello in Willenhall.
Right.
She's got, she did have quite a strong accent. My mum and dad couldn't understand the bleeding words she was on about.
Yeah. Your,
they couldn't understand a word.
Your accent is... I can hear your Ipswich now, actually.
When I went home,
you said home, and I thought, I can hear it. Trevor, good to talk to you, mate.
All the best, mate.
And to you as well. Up the apples and pears, Trevor from Darlaston. The Saturn, well, he's in Darlaston now. He's moved around a bit, hasn't he? I'll play you this, but be warned, they're Geordies. I don't know whether... I think you're going to get on. We'll give it a bash.
You get a shiver in the dark. It's raining in the park, but meantime. Sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything. A band is blowing Dixie, double fall time. You feel alright when you hear the music ring. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many. In other places, but the horns they blowing that sound way on down south. Guitar George, he knows all the chords. Mighty strictly rhythm, he doesn't wanna make it cry or sing. It's then an old guitar is all he can't afford. When he gets up under the lights to play his thing,
You're easily impressed, you are, aren't you, Frank Sertelli?
Hello. This is the BBC calling. I'm just sitting in front of one of these really old-fashioned looking microphones.
It is an old-fashioned. It's about 500 quid with the microphone you sat in front of there. You think you'd sound better than you do, wouldn't you, really?
Why have you got your phone out?
I just want to take a quick picture of you sitting in front of your old-fashioned.
Do you want me to smile or not?
It's too late, I've already...
Is that a new phone?
I've already... Yeah, it is, actually. It's one of those where it takes more than one picture to make the best of the photograph. And I've just taken a photograph of you, and he didn't like any of them. That's weird, isn't it?
We're talking about smartphones, because making a phone call on your mobile is the sixth most popular thing you do on a mobile phone now.
I saw this. It's just perverse, isn't it? But yeah,
I presume taking a photograph would be number one.
Look at that fingerprint technology on mine now,
Really?
Look at that. Look, so it knows me. Look, I've registered my fingerprint, and it allows me in.
So you don't have to push the four-digit code or anything like that?
Yeah, get one of your big galoofing sausage fingers out and stick it on there.
Yes.
Just stick
what's
it on there.
Just
touch it on the button. No, not like that. I'm not jabbing. Don't get all jabby with me.
Do you want a thumb or a finger? It's like being at passport control all over again. I've only come into the studio to say what's on the show.
I've been to the doctor's. Just gently, just put your finger on there. Just stick it on that. No, just hold
nothing's
it on
happened.
There.
It's
no,
gone
hold
all
it on there. That's
hold
what
it. Okay, I'm holding
what's
it. I'm holding
it. Doing? What's it saying?
It's doing nothing. It's doing absolutely nothing.
Has
it
said try
broken.
Again?
It's completely broken. You need to take it back.
Broken.
The screen's gone.
You're putting your finger in the wrong place.
Where do you want me to put my finger? You said put your finger on the screen.
Yeah, all right. So you're doing smartphones. That should be quite entertaining in itself, shouldn't it, really, as to... How you get on with that? I like the beard, by the way. Is that a beard?
I could say the same to you.
This is... I'm George Michael. People mistake me for very often.
Do they? What, a balding George Michael?
A very, very, very badly bald George Michael, yes.
Just out of interest, have you been to that display of poppies at the Tower of London?
I haven't. I'm amazed why people go. I don't get it.
What do you mean you don't get it?
I don't get it at all. I keep seeing people put it on Facebook. I don't know why they're going. I don't understand why they're going. I don't get it.
Nearly 800,000 poppies planted, and they've had 8,000 volunteers, and there's a waiting list of volunteers to help with the planting of all these poppies, and they reckon 4 million people will have been to the Tower of London to see it by the time they start to... Because everybody's bought at least one of them online, haven't they? 25 quid each.
I don't get it.
Ceramic poppy.
Do you get it? Do you understand it? Do you want people make the trip to London? I get why they do... And I'm not disrespecting the soldiers.
I've spoken to two or three people who've been, and they say it's very, very emotional when you're there.
Right.
Maybe you need to be there to experience it.
Perhaps that's what it is.
But it looks spectacular. I just wonder whether anybody's been to the Tower of London to see this display. If you have, phone the show, 03453 009956. Foreign aid on the menu as well tonight, because it wouldn't surprise you to know that the Independent Commission for Aid Impact finds that quite a bit of the money that we're sending is going to aid corruption in various countries.
So that's a waste of time as well, isn't it?
You know, North Korea gets foreign aid.
Does it?
Not sure it gets foreign aid directly from us, but it's one of those countries that gets foreign aid.
Just for haircut?